This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about Chinese water chestnuts.
Right. Yes. Any reason this was on your mind?
No. I was looking through our idea spreadsheet and this was in there. So it's entirely possible that this was a listener suggestion about 4 to 5 years ago.
Or, you know, any time. It could have been any time.
It could have.
But yes. Uh-huh. Well, that's funny because I could have sworn we already had done this one. I was very convinced.
I thought we did too, but then I searched our sheet and I was like, well, we appear to have not, so cool. Okay, here we go.
I think one day we're going to accidentally do the same episode twice. Not mm-hmm. purposefully, accidentally.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then we can compare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be great. It'll be a nice exercise in Google Foo.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. Well, I this episode made me think of our episode we did on baby corn.
Oh, sure. Uh-huh.
Because I think we talked about this in the baby corn episode. But I do love water chestnuts. Oh. I like the crunch and the texture. And I like how they soak up the flavor. I love them as a kid. I have very fond, nostalgic memories with them. I'm very glad you gave me the etymology. Thank mm-hmm. you for that. Before I started the research. Because I could have gone in a lot of ways.
Yeah, no problem. Or not the etymology, but the botanical name. Yeah, because there are mm-hmm. a number of different things called water chestnuts. Mm-hmm. We are talking about the one that is ostensibly from China, ish.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's mm-hmm, yep.
Yes. Well, it was fun to research for the history section, and I'm sure for you in the science and what is it section. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Although I will say that I, unlike you, do not have fond childhood memories of this item. I don't enjoy it when I come across it. I'm kind of mad that it's taking up space in my food. I'm like, why is this weirdly crunchy thing here amongst my non-crunchy things? What's going on? I did discover that it's sometimes used in some kinds of dim sum, like sumai, and mm-hmm. that I do enjoy the crunch in those. So maybe it's just a situational thing. Maybe it's like, and also like canned versus fresh. I'm going to go into it. Yeah. Yeah. Vaguely speaking of the botany issue, though, you can see our tarot episode, maybe. It's kind of similar. Botanically, or like, I don't know, like what are other rhizomy, quormy things? Ginger, wasabi, cranberries. That's getting into bogs rather than corms. But anyway, yeah, sure.
Yeah, baby corn. I'm pretty sure you talked about this in baby corn.
Yep.
So I guess that brings us to our question.
It does.
Chinese water chestnuts. What are they?
Well, Chinese water chestnuts are a type of corm, C-O-R-M, which is a sort of a root vegetable type thing. They look a little bit like a tree chestnut or maybe like a buckeye, a sort of squished sphere with a brownish purple black skin, a little bit more than an inch in diameter, like 3+ centimeters. You typically peel the skin, and then the flesh inside will be opaque, creamy white, very crisp and juicy, a little bit nutty, a little bit sweet, tart. Sort of similar to like a nice crisp apple or an Asian pear, but with a little bit of that like rich, nutty flavor, sort of like a coconut. You can eat them raw or cook them into any number of savory or sweet dishes, and they'll hold a lot of their crisp. I understand that they're really delicately flavorful when they are fresh. I do think I've only had them canned, at which point they do lose a lot of their flavor. But from what I understand, they're sort of like a sweet water radish. They're like a little potato that just won't quit. They're like a spring morning out by a lake, crisp and sweet. Okay, so those other types of chestnuts we're not talking about either the European or Indian water chestnuts, also called caltrops. Today, those are different things. These are also in no way related to the tree nut that we call chestnuts. We call them water chestnuts because they look a little bit like those tree nuts. Anyway, you could see our chestnut episode for more on that. I'm pretty sure that is one that we've done.
Yes, it is.
Oh, great. Oh,
tragedy. Yes.
Okay, good. Okay, but what we are talking about today, botanical name, Iliocheris dulcis. Sure, let's go with that. Yeah, Chinese water chestnuts are a subtropical-ish member of the sedge family, or Cyperaceae, which is not a family of plants that we like typically get food from. They are a semi-aquatic plant that prefers shallow marshes and bogs, similar conditions to rice paddies, and they are sometimes grown in rotation with rice, or considered weeds in rice fields. They grow these clumps of tall, skinny, spiky stems above the water that look like other types of marsh grass. And these stems, although they're not a grass technically, anyway, and these stems grow up out of underwater rhizomes that provide like structural support, okay? The rhizomes themselves grow their own little like root cellar food storage systems down in the waterbed called corms. And this is the operative part of the plant for us. These corms have roots coming off the bottom to help root them in place and gather nutrients. And the plants reproduce by both growing offshoot rhizomes underwater from which new stems and corms can grow, and by flowers and seeds that grow up from specialized stems. Although the seeds will take a couple years to establish new plants and produce corms, that's because the corms are, right, they're storage systems for the plants to keep water and sugars and other nutrients across, like, dry, dim, wintry weather. We also find them delicious and nutritious. Suckers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Can't stop us.
No. You don't have opposable thumbs, and we do. Silly plants. But okay, because we are ostensibly a food show. All right, so if you find freshwater chestnuts in a grocery store, you'll notice that each has little stem bits on the kind of flattish top and then little root bits on the slightly pointed bottom. A corm is technically a modified stem. So its skin is made up of modified leaves that ensheath the nutrient-holding inner tissue. That's why their skin will be a little bit flaky, sort of like an onion skin. That starchy flesh inside is really interesting because it does not break down when it's heated. Like, think about how a potato goes all soft and mushy when it's cooked, right? Chinese water chestnuts don't do that. You can cook it fresh or even can it, and it will maintain its crispness. And science isn't entirely sure why, which is so cool.
Yes.
Yeah, they are working on it, but there's like a lot of factors. So anyway, yeah. But right, as I said above, canning water chestnuts often does sap them of most of their flavor, leaving their texture really the only draw, which for people who enjoy it is quite a draw.
It is. Thank you.
It is good at soaking up sauce.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. No, if you're into it, more for you. More for you, man.
Absolutely.
but they are, yes, chopped and cooked into both savory and sweet dishes, eaten raw as a fruit. They're also made into chips in some cuisines or can be processed into juice for beverages or pickled or candied. They can also be ground and then dried into a type of like flour or powder, which can then be used to make baked goods like crispy cookies or steamed cakes, sort of gelatinous, like chewy, tender, crunchy, because they usually have little bits of fresh water chestnut in them as well. Yeah, those are really popular in dim sum, especially around the Lunar New Year. The flour can also be used to thicken sauces or as a crust on deep fried foods.
Sounds so good.
I know. Oh, I need to get a hold of some fresh ones, like stat. I've definitely seen them in like H Mart.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever thought about what they were because I was just like, I don't know. Cool. I'm keep moving on.
Right. There's a lot to look at.
There's
H
a lot.
Mart, so that's fair.
Oh, but now, okay. Also, the plant is being investigated for the structural properties of its fibers, not in food science, but in material science. Like the processed microfibers have been suggested as an ingredient in composites to help reinforce the material. And I will say that the spiky stems have long been used in crafting things like mats.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what about the nutrition?
You know, by themselves, raw Chinese water chestnuts are pretty good for you. Lots of fiber, good spread of micronutrients, a little bit of protein. Pair with the fat and more protein to help keep you going. They are well regarded in traditional Chinese medicine as a cooling food. And research has shown that they contain like antioxidant and antibacterial compounds. Although you might need to consume like concentrated extracts or like a whole lot of Chinese water chestnuts in order to really access those. Some of these compounds are currently being investigated as like food additives to help prevent foodborne illness. Yeah. You know, save our motto, bodies are complicated. More research is necessary before ingesting a medicinal amount of anything. Probably consult a medical professional who is not us.
Definitely not.
Nope.
Definitely not.
Nopers.
No. Well, we have a couple numbers for you.
Just a couple. So in China alone, at least 1.4 million tons of Chinese water chestnuts are grown every year, that crop being worth nearly $2 billion.
Whew.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah. Uh-huh. And each plant can hypothetically grow up to like 5 pounds or like about 2.5 kilos a year.
Wow. A lot of water chestnuts.
Yep. Yep, yep.
Yes, of this specific variety. And they've got quite a history behind them.
They do, and we are going to get into that as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having pink lady apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
And we're back. Thank you, Spencer.
Yes, thank you.
And we are back with, unfortunately, a shorter history section than I normally like. But I did, I did the thing where I like built this whole thing out and then I realized I was talking about the wrong water chestnut.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And that was no fault to you. No, it was me. Because a lot of especially older publications didn't specify.
Sure.
But then I realized what I was tackling. And so I feel good about this.
Okay.
But also I wish I had more. So as always, listeners, if you have more resources or just, you know, stories, anecdotes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, always
appreciated. Mm-hmm. Always appreciated. But okay, that being said, according to most things I read, Chinese water chestnuts are native to Eastern Asia, though some sources claim they are also native to Africa and Oceania, and they grow in China, Australia, and Indonesia natively. Since ancient times, people in that region have been cultivating them. They've used them medicinally and culinarily. In some places, they may have been regarded as something of a delicacy. Water chestnuts were first introduced to the U.S. as an ornamental plant in the mid-1800s. Various writings indicate they were being sold in markets and eaten by the 1700s throughout most of Asia and the Pacific. And this is when some of the confusion happens, because other water chestnuts are seen as very environmentally bad for the U.S. invasive. And it happened around this time. So there was a lot of confusion around which one was which and what was doing what. But the ones we're talking about, Chinese water chestnuts, were fine.
Yeah, generally considered okay, can be considered invasive depending on the situation and like what else you're doing with the land.
And then with the Industrial Revolution, folks discovered that these water chestnuts were unique in that they could retain their crispness and texture after being canned and or cooked. So that was an early discovery and still we're wondering about it. According to some things I read, water chestnuts weren't really introduced to the U.S. until the 1930s when they were cultivated in Florida, Georgia, and California, where there was this research and experimentation into how to make this crop a viable commercial industry. It sounds like they never, please correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, but from what it sounds like, they never really figured it out.
Yeah, as of the late 1980s, at any rate, some of the stuff I was reading indicated that, yeah, no one had ever really made it a thing.
Yeah, they were like able to grow it, but not on a level that was viable.
Yeah, maybe on like a supplemental, like if you're growing, if you're raising catfish and you want to have a secondary crop there. Not that catfish are a crop, but you understand what I mean.
Catfish around the world are screaming at you, Lauren.
They are. I know. They're going to be all up in the comments on Apple Podcasts.
No, I can't handle it. Please don't do it, catfish.
Oh, no. But yeah, so maybe it's like a supplemental thing, but not as a primary cash crop on their own.
Right. But especially Florida really put a lot of research into how to make it happen. They were like, what can we do? And just the circumstances aren't right. Something's not right. It's not working to this day, but it's still grown there. It's just not a major industry at all by any means.
Yeah.
The U.S. was importing 1,154 tons of canned Chinese water chestnuts per year by 1947, which is a lot.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
I assume that that's dovetailing with the rise of American Chinese restaurants around the country.
That is also my assumption. And researchers in Florida devoted several years into looking into the water chestnut in the late 1980s, as you kind of mentioned, Lauren. This was the same decade that U.S. imports of water chestnuts rose dramatically, again, from 152 metric tons in 1983 to 529 metric tons in 1987. And I think, again, it goes with another wave of immigrants from China.
Yeah, yeah. And this time that was fresh water chestnuts, yeah. Not canned. So mm-hmm. Right. So the desire to eat them fresh and or to cook them from fresh, from raw, was growing.
It was growing. Mm-hmm. And these were also popular in Australia. Australia started commercially cultivating water chestnuts in 1998. And I did find a lot of... several times in these episodes and the research, you find these really dry, very much appreciated, like 80-page
yeah.
government documents about a crop. And I found a few from Australia. So clearly they are looking into it and thinking about it.
Yeah.
But that was what I found for that. But,
yeah.
But it was also a lot of dense...
uh-huh. Yeah, that's my summation of science isn't sure why the texture thing happens is the result of me having solidly skimmed a like 215-page mm-hmm. paper about that very thing.
And they've got charts and graphs and you're like trying to look at them and make sense of them. And you're like, I did not go to school for this, though.
All of this different kind of data, but right, like I did one of my first jobs out of school was actually copy editing for a medical research journal about arthritis and rheumatism. And so like I kind of know how to read
mm-hmm.
a lot of dense scientific papers. Like there's part of my brain that can still kind of parse it, but
yeah,
not in a truly useful way. Like,
yeah,
because I'm still not right. Like I still have to Google every other word to be like, okay, what are we talking about? Like what? What is that compound? Mm. What is that piece of equipment? What are we discussing here?
Mm-hmm.
And which is especially hilarious when you've done that for, you know, a 215-page paper and the basic conclusion is, we looked at these things, but, you know, we're not sure.
But probably that was the basic conclusion.
TLDR
they could have put at the end of the paper.
I'm pretty confident in that, but
yeah, not to dismiss their research, but
no. And also mm-hmm. that's a thing that happens in science. That's actually a beautiful thing that happens in science is that we get to pose questions and then the answer might be, we still don't know. Mm-hmm. I love that.
We have
that.
To look at it at a different angle or let's try it again in this way, or maybe we'll get a different idea. No, I think that's amazing too. Mm-hmm. The water chestnut, inspiring people for millennia.
Yeah. That was certainly inspiring me right now. I'm like, oh, I'm going to go. I'm going to find some.
You should. And then report back.
Yeah. Maybe it'll be my new favorite thing.
Maybe. I bet there are a lot of ways to cook it that are outside of what you and I have tried. So listeners, again, if you have any recipes.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Mm. But I think that's what we have to say about the Chinese water chestnut for now.
I think it is. We do already have some listener mail for you, though, and we are going to get into that as soon as we get back from one more quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressing, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with
Listener Mail.
I was envisioning a piranha plant from Mario.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure why, but the visual of them gave me that vibe.
Okay. That's not
sure.
I mean, entirely what that is. It's more like marsh grass with bulbs underneath it. But, you know, you also did go ahead.
Oh, no. Sometimes I was just going to say, sometimes I have an image in my head and it's not correct. But that's the image that I have.
That's what it is. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You also, I will say that you might be influenced by the fact that you just got back from visiting Universal Studios LA and or Universal Studios Hollywood, I should say. And they have a Super Mario World there.
They do. And a lot of you listeners have written in about it and the food that they have.
Oh.
I didn't get to try any of the food because there was a wait.
Okay.
Well, I'll just have to go again. Oh, terrible. But yes, I'm also kind of tired and very loopy, so I apologize in advance if you could hear it in this episode.
Oh,
but
no.
I just got back last night. Late last night.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know.
Those West Coast, East Coast flights. Yep.
Yep. You leave at 7 a.m. and you get back at 6 p.m. and
yep.
It's crazy.
Ooh. So good.
Yeah. And Lauren and I just got back from Las Vegas, too, so.
Yeah.
We were excited to share that with you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Soon.
But in the meantime, Christine, who has written in a couple of times, is binging some episodes and has written us a couple of messages lately. So we have a couple of those to share with you now. Starting with this one. Annie, with regard to the Mayo question, have you tried Kewpie yet? Kewpie is sublime. It is the monarch of condiments. It brings a wonderful zing to fried chicken, shellfish, steamed dumplings, fish and chips, steak sandwiches, and so many other foods. It isn't runny. It has no strange aftertaste. It will change your life. I understand your mayo aversion because I, too, used to hate mayo. I don't know what American brands are like, but they can't possibly be as bad as the unspeakably vile snot-textured mayo of the Australian 1980s. I have no idea what went into it. And I don't want to know. I started to overcome my aversion when I discovered homemade mayo, but then Kewpie came into my life, and it was as though I could suddenly taste color. It even comes in different flavors. I particularly enjoy the yuzu, but I've been too scared to try the wasabi. I haven't tried it yet. I'm kind of convinced, as with many other things, that I probably have had it, and I just didn't know that that's what it was, but I have not tried it since then and known that that was what it was.
Okay.
And I don't think I've had it since I made that statement.
Okay. Because if you've ever had a takoyaki, at like an izakaya, like a Japanese pub kind of situation, it mm-hmm. almost certainly had a drizzle of kewpie on top.
Mm-hmm.
That and like a couple other like pub dishes like that very frequently come with a drizzle of kewpie, and it's heckin' beautiful.
Okay. Oh, I think I'll love it. I need to get it. What a problem to have. So many things to try.
I know. I'm like, don't let the mayo make you too nervous.
Oh, I think it'll be great. I think it'll be good.
Yeah. I have not tried the flavored ones.
I haven't either. And I'm like, oh, I love wasabi. So
right? I love yuzu. I love both.
Oh, my gosh. But I also, once again, your prose is great. The monarch of condiments. They should hire you.
They should. Write
to write some copy.
Okay, speaking of, Christine also wrote, in listening to the 2021 episodes, I heard in a listener mail segment a Lebanese listener lament that she couldn't eat hummus because she was allergic to the sesame seeds in tahini. I realize that mail was over 2 years ago and she might have found a solution, but I have an alternative that should work for her and is delicious. I make my own hummus because most Australian commercial hummus goes overboard with the tahini, and a lot of them are also unpleasantly sour from vinegar. As it happens, though chickpea purees and tahini are both ancient, combining them is relatively recent, give or take a few centuries. I have a number of Middle Eastern cookbooks, ranging from the 10th century to 15th century CE. They all have chickpea puree recipes and all use tahini extensively, but none have tahini in chickpea puree. The following is adapted from a 14th century Mamluk text. Okay, so you combine 2 cans of chickpeas, the zest and juice of a lemon, a generous bunch of coriander or cilantro, include the stems and roots, salt, pepper, and powdered ginger in a food processor, and pulverize until smooth. With the motor running, drizzle in olive oil. I like to use garlic-infused olive oil to the desired consistency. You can mix up the herbs and spices. The coriander is just my favorite. As for soup recipes, my toilet currently smells quite weird because we are in asparagus season, which means I am consuming disturbing amounts of asparagus soup. I won't give you that recipe because you are not in asparagus season, but I will give you my much-loved garlic soup recipe. Your toilet won't smell so weird, though pets and housemates may not like your breath. Okay, you'll need 50 cloves at least of garlic, 1 liter of chicken or vegetable stock, a good handful of thyme leaves, 3 egg yolks, and salt and pepper to taste. Peel the garlic, then add to the boiling stock with the thyme. Simmer for around 10 minutes until the garlic is soft. Remove from the heat, then blend everything together. Meanwhile, whisk the egg yolks together. Slowly add some of the hot liquid to the egg yolks and combine well. Keep adding and mixing the liquid to the egg yolk around a ladle at a time until you've added about a third of the liquid to the egg yolk mix. You can then combine the rest of the hot soup liquid with the egg yolk mix and stir well without risking the egg yolks curdling and splitting. Instead, you'll have a rich, smooth soup which you add salt and pepper to taste. It can be eaten hot or cold. The asparagus soup can also be eaten hot or cold, and when your asparagus comes into season, remind me to give you the recipe. Footnote, my personal favorite historical use of tahini is in the stuffing of a spit-roasted chicken. I recently acquired an electric spit, so bet your favorite books I will be making it soon.
Oh, man. That's so cool.
Wow, cool. I have never thought about putting tahini just right up in a chicken, and now I want to do that with some lemon. Oh, my goodness. That would be so good.
Oh, my gosh. Be amazing. We're definitely follow up on that and the asparagus soup.
Yes.
This is my ultimate test to find out if Lauren truly is a vampire. Shall make this soup with 50 cloves of garlic at least.
50 cloves to 1 liter? To 1 liter of liquid?
Oh.
To 1 liter?
I think it sounds delicious, Lauren. I think.
Oh my heck. It sounds delicious. I understand that I have an intolerance to alliums. Like I could try like half a spoonful of this, and then after that, I would have a very bad night.
Convenient. No, I won't make you eat something that'll make you feel miserable. But it is convenient.
It is convenient. I agree.
That sounds amazing. I love garlic, and I do not have the issues. I do feel bad for you, Lauren.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that sounds quite strong, very strong. I literally cannot imagine the flavor. Like, that sounds so intense.
Okay. Well, I'll try but to love, describe
but in a,
it.
But in a lovely way. Yeah, yeah. I mean, garlic is great.
It is great. It is hard to peel them, though, so I appreciate that, that's a whole step.
Oh,
peeling
yeah.
all mm-hmm. of the garlic.
You know the trick with a knife edge, right? With a knife flat, yeah?
So
what you do when you want to peel garlic, you put a clove out on your cutting board, and you take the flat edge of a large knife, like a chef's knife or butcher knife or something like that, and put it like parallel to the cutting board on top of the garlic, and then just give the flat blade of the knife like a good boop with the palm of your hand or with the ball of your fist. Okay, that'll split the skin of the garlic, and then you can just shuck it right off.
Ooh. Still learning. Tips to this very day. I'll give it a go.
Be really careful with the knife blade.
Yeah, that's I'm a little worried about that part.
Yeah.
But I feel like I can figure it out.
Yeah. If you have a spatula or something else, like that's solid, that doesn't have holes
yeah,
in it.
Yeah, kind of a similar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd work too and not cut you probably.
Yeah. Yes. And also, yeah, the chickpea tahini.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. That sounds so good.
Yeah. I'm so entertained that was, right, only a relatively recent combination. But mm-hmm. how delicious a combination.
How delicious. So mm-hmm. many delicious things yeah. in this email. Mm-hmm. And we love hearing from you listeners about delicious things. So thank you.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you, Christine, for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
And we are also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod. And we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico is home to a thriving culinary scene based on products and traditions from the native Taino, African, and Spanish peoples that have influenced it.
When you go, there are a host of restaurants, bars, breweries, distilleries, farms, and coffee houses to dig into, from five-star experiences to local favorites.
No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.